welcome to Sundays with the Bionic Bishop. I'm Bishop Jan Biederstad of the Worldwide Anglican Church, and I'm going to bring you stories from the mission field where I've been a missionary over in Africa and Asia for 22 years, along with some Christian news, and the feature, Ask the Bishop. Any questions you got about theology, send them in to WKJC at WKJC.com. And now, let's get into today's program.
And by Living Waters Apostolic Ministries, with worship services at 11 a.m. on Sundays at 725 Newman Street in East Tawas, where the inerrant Word of God is taught to one and all, the one God, the one Father, one faith, and one baptism is open to all. And now, here's This Sunday Morning with Bishop Biederstad.
Welcome to Sundays with the Bionic Bishop. This is Archbishop Jan Biederstad of the Worldwide Anglican Church, and I'm sending this to all of you. Greetings from beautiful Uganda, where I've been for the last, month and a half, getting ready to return to the USA by May 8th. And I've been gone for about 4 months. It's been a great time. I spent a lot of time in Nepal, now in Uganda, doing crusades. We've been involved in 3 different crusades here. But before I get into that, I want to introduce my co-hosts.
This is Paula Kelsey.
And Marvin Lee.
And we have a special hymn this morning that Paula has selected.
Today I'm going to be talking about Take My Life and Let It Be. And this was written by Francis Ridley Havergal in 1874. And Francis Havergal was known as the consecration poet. She attempted to live a life fully consecrated to Christ and to those she saw in any physical or spiritual need. She began reading and memorizing Bible passages at age 4 and writing verse by age 7. I think that's remarkable. Her father was an Anglican clergyman and also lived a consecrated life. She was fragile and only lived to be 43. She learned several languages, as well as Hebrew and Greek. She was also an accomplished singer and pianist. She wrote this song while visiting Arley House. Some were converted and some were not, but there were no rejoicing Christians. She prayed, "Lord, give me all in this house." As they started rejoicing, it was night, and she could not sleep for the joy. And she passed the night renewing her own consecration, and the song formed itself line by line until the end, "Ever Only for Thee."
Take my life and let it be consecrated. At the impulse
Thank you, Paula, for that. Well, as I said, that I have been over here doing crusades and doing teaching. Some of the work has been involved working with the Patriarch as a senior primate of the Worldwide Anglican Church. What that is, that's the number two position in the Worldwide Anglican Church, only after the Patriarch, and who lives in Uganda. So I spent some time working with him, helping to develop different programs. We saw the enthronement of a new bishop over in the western part of the country. And it's kind of an unusual one because it's a crossover. While he has 20 churches that he has founded over in the southwestern part of the country near the city of Mbarara, which is the second largest city of Uganda. And we had a chance to tour his cathedral there in the city. He also is going to be a missionary bishop in neighboring Congo. Now, Congo has its own archbishop, but the problem with Congo is a huge country. The country was colonized by the Belgians, and it has a very checkered history. Under King Leopold, it was viewed as, for many, many decades, as being the ultimate example of what colonialism should be. But there was also a very dark underside that's only been coming to light in recent times. Congo is too big of a country. It is divided into, it should be divided into five countries, according to my friend, the very Reverend Eric Bakanja here in Uganda, because there's really five different regions. The Congo River bisects it, but to get from one end of the country can take literally days. And that's the reason why we're putting a missionary bishop over into the very eastern part of the country. In that area, there are no paved roads. It's the main road that goes from Mombasa in Kenya all the way to Kinshasa, which is on the very western side of Africa in the Congo. Kinshasa is also the capital of Congo. It also creates a problem because once you cross into Congo, it is pretty much a lawless area for much of the country. The Chinese are very, very involved there because they have discovered rare metals, which is being used for making batteries that we become so famous for pushing here, the Green New Deal. Well, the Green New Deal is sadly rising on the back of young children working in the mines. These mines have Chinese connections. The Chinese do not care what is going on in those mines with those children, how badly they're being abused, the long hours, the very poor pay that they're receiving. They're mining those minerals which they need to make money for China. And the country fights over all the rare metals. There is gold, there is other minerals there. Africa itself is a very, very wealthy continent. Everything grows in sub-Saharan Africa. There is no winter, so they get many crops here off their fields. Some of these countries are very stable, like Uganda. And then you get into places like the Congo. That's anything but stable. To the north of here, you get in a sub-Sahara where you get into more of the Muslim areas. And those areas are not very stable at all. Or some, I take that back, some are, a place like Sudan that's been fighting again recently between two generals. That area, whole area of Sudan, which has been split. Now, the Christian southern part is trying to be developed right now, but it's a difficult place. Because maybe it's because of lack of winter. There's no reason to prepare for a time when nothing grows, when you can't simply go outside and eat something that you can find growing out there. But the Congo is sadly a mess. And I would say of Black Africa, which is Sub-Saharan Africa, probably the two countries that are the biggest problems right now really are places like Congo and South Sudan. South Sudan experienced over 50 years of civil war, and they have no clue at this point how really to go from half a century of fighting one another to starting to how to work together. That's going to take a major amount of time to teach a people who have traditionally been very warlike. The area of South Sudan was known as Equatoria in the early days because the British tried to settle that area for farms. They found the land extremely fertile, the climate fantastic, and they were driven out by the various tribes that were there. They didn't want any foreigners. And so the land has never been allowed to really develop. So they struggle today with deciding what to do, how to develop and go forward. They are at least making roads that are paved now in South Sudan, which is far better than Congo. Literally from the capital in Kinshasa to reach the Ugandan border can take 4 days over a dirt road. And that's what the semis are going back and forth across the country are having to do. They have paved roads all the way from Mombasa to the Congo border. And then from there, it's a rough journey with bandits along the way. So Congo is a difficult place. Zimbabwe has been difficult thanks to some of the poor government under Robert Mugabe, who was the one who took over after it went from white rule of Rhodesia and became Zimbabwe. He was kind of the leader of the revolution and then just sort of let it go. He started giving the land, the bond to the white farmers, to his buddies who did no farming, let the place go back to the monkeys, literally. It became jungle again, these beautiful farms. And the people starved of poor management. And so the whole continent of Africa is having to go very quickly from being a time 100 some years ago when it was living as it had for hundreds of thousands of years, to the colonial period that did slingshot them forward, and now trying to feel their way past tribal battles, problems that they have working together, and to find common ground. It will take probably another 100 years. But once Africa starts pulling together as a continent, it will be a powerhouse because of the wealth that's within here. And sadly, the wealth also can be a major problem in getting people to work together. Because wealth invites greed. And greed is sadly the sinful nature of humanity that goes down to our very core. Well, this is the Bionic Bishop saying stay tuned for some important announcements.
Did you know that the world's best coffee comes from Nepal? It is the smoothest, richest coffee grown in the Himalayas, shade-grown, rich in flavor, and extremely low in acid. And those of us with acid reflux can drink this all day, not a problem. Absolutely the most delicious coffee. It's available if you go to RenaissanceOutreachMinistries.com, but it's wonderful coffee and the best you'll ever drink. Remember, Nepal coffee is the best.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Mornings with the Bionic Bishop. This is Bishop Jan Biederstedt, Archbishop of North America for the Worldwide Anglican Church. I'm recording here in Mbarara, Uganda, which is in the far southwestern part of the country. And this is kind of a cold area where we actually have to use jackets at night during the rainy season, where the rest of the country, no need for a jacket. And I will be soon coming back to Michigan, be coming back about the 9th of May, and it's been a great trip. I've enjoyed being gone, being finally back to be able to spend some time both in Nepal, where we accomplished a lot with the seminary, and also now planting the new campus down here in Kampala, Uganda, which is the capital of Uganda. And already we have people running the basic program in places like Kasese, Mbale, and over here in Bambara. The other thing that's exciting today is we are presenting the first African doctorate to the Reverend, now Dr. Eric Sunday Bakanja, and he is an Anglican, Church of Uganda, and he's been studying for the last 3 years. He began under the late John Ruthven, who was retired from Regent's University. Unfortunately, he passed away last year of COVID, and so I ended up taking over that part of the program. Well, as we start looking at where things are at, I've noticed that the Chinese presence continues to grow and grow and grow around the world, especially across Africa and Asia. I was surprised when I came to Nigeria in 1998 to see how much the Chinese were here already. And I at that point had never realized the Chinese were even doing anything much outside of China back in the late 1990s. But I'm also noticing that it continues to grow. And now in Uganda, when I was here back in 2019, there was a presence of the Chinese that was there. And they were working on the roads. And now I'm seeing factories everywhere. There's, when you go up to Bambara, there's a huge industrial complex that in Chinese letters of the big gate proclaims the Chinese Ugandan factory center. And the Chinese presence is not exactly well received here in China, just like other countries I've been. The government loves these. All the politicians around the world love it because the Chinese have no problem in sending money. Now, as I've talked about in the program before, they give the money, expect it paid back, and it will be paid back. And if a country cannot pay it back, they start seizing their natural resources. They have found what I could call is a new form of colonialism. We're under the British and the French, they took over the land and they pursued operating the government. Here, they don't care about the local government because the government takes orders from Beijing. And they put in their people that are high up in the CCP, and they open up these factories. They are profit-making part of the CCP. And the local people find it, they resent the Chinese. They've always liked the Americans. They've always liked others, and the British even. It was not such an issue with the Ugandans. But here with the Chinese, they are reports of how the people are being abused mentally, and some reports, I'd not be able to confirm it, physically. They do not like working for the Chinese. And the Chinese really don't like the local people. I saw this in Nepal when they first started coming back about 10 years ago. They came and they worked through Nepali tourism companies. Now, no Chinese comes through the Nepali companies because they've come into the country and established their own. And the Chinese will always choose Chinese. There is a definite xenophobic attitude that it's China for China. And the people tend to, there seems to be an attitude that we don't really like outsiders. I've read that before, that throughout history, that there's been some truth in that. The Chinese, of course, did not really stop invaders much because they always had an attitude, they'll become Chinese. And they did over time because the culture of China was always superior to those who attacked them from the neighbors. Certainly beyond the Mongolians, among some of the other cultural groups that came in. During the time of Mao Zedong, though, he had to tell the people that they were actually quite backward, because up until the time of the Communist Revolution, they thought they were still number one in the world. There was always that attitude. And now they're working to reclaim what they've always believed, that they were superior. And their treatment of foreigners and their own and the lands of the foreign people, not good. No one wants to work for the Chinese. That's the reports I get. Up in Nepal, they call them the noodle tourists because of the noodles they eat. They just absolutely don't have anything good to say. The government, of course, like I said earlier, loves them because they're more than willing to extend the money that they need for roads, infrastructure, other things they dream about. And then when they can't pay for it,
unlike the United States and Europe and World Bank, that always worked out some kind of a deal, they will not. In fact, they even have the dealings are secret, that they cannot even reveal to their own people what exactly they have, their politicians have agreed to do. Politicians around the world are the same. They're all greedy to be reelected. That's what they count on. These jobs become good-paying jobs. In fact, in the third world, you'll see people become rich by going into government because of all the graft. It is a difficult time. And if the United States doesn't wake up and start to notice how much China is encroaching around the world and we're losing our influence, we will become a second-rate power in not too many years. I'm watching it firsthand. I'm seeing the problems, and it frightens me. As I see China flexing more and more muscle, I see it done overtly and covertly. And that should alarm every American, because our days may be numbered if we don't stand up, and soon. That's my report here from Uganda, where the Chinese are taking over more and more of the natural resources because Ugandans can't afford to pay for all the roads that are being put in. I should now stay tuned now for some very important announcements.
When we think about spices, we think about the spice islands of Indonesia. But do you realize that India and Bangladesh and Nepal are some of the biggest spice producers in the world? And through Renaissance Outreach Ministries, we have from Nepal, from the Himalayas, all kinds of spices, from the most potent cinnamons and nutmegs to masalas, the garlic that is beyond imagination of how aromatic and strong it is. We use just a little bit. We have it available at Renaissance Outreach Ministries. And in this area, you can also buy it at Klino's Market in East Tawas. And so check it out. You'll not find spice better anywhere else. Go to our website, www.renaissanceoutreachministries.com. Welcome back to part three. And this is usually a time for questions with the bishop. I think we're going to have probably some questions here, probably for Pastor Bruce. But you were talking before the program about Abraham's bosom. I do have to ask the question, is that the actual words in the Greek, Abraham's bosom?
You know, I don't know if it's the actual words in the Greek. I just know that the English reference is Abraham's bosom. Yes. Again, there's a lot of differences between the English words. For instance, we see things about loving with our hearts, but when you look in the original tongue, it says with our bowels, and that's just not as pleasant of a thought.
I might point out, though, in English, the original Old English of bosom also meant place of refuge.
Oh, that's nice.
And since it's Father Abraham is viewed as the father
right.
of the Hebrew race, it
of
would
the
only
covenant.
Make sense that they would call it Abraham's place or refuge.
Right.
I like that better because
right.
the idea of bosom or breast seems kind of strange.
Well, it actually comes from babes being with their mother at their breast because that was considered the safe place for a babe to be.
Okay.
So if you think of it in terms of we're spiritual babes and we're resting in Abraham's bosom, we're in his place of safety.
Right. And that's how they would view it too, knowing that it's the covenant that was made with him, and that's what they're part of. So mm-hmm. that would be very comforting to
yes,
them.
Yes, it makes sense.
Okay.
So you have to view the old English words for their alternative meanings, and then you have to translate that or make the verb transitive to the subject.
In hopes that whoever yes. used that word in the first place was correct on their usage.
That's true, because Old English only had about 25,000 or so words to express what in the Greek, Chaldean, and
right.
Hebrew was millions of words.
Right.
In fact, modern English still does not begin to approach the depth of the original languages from which the text is taken.
Yeah, another example would be like the word love.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's multiple
yes.
words, and they all mean something different, mm-hmm. and you don't want to mix them up.
Very true.
So, you know, and when we're looking at the scriptures, you know, there's going to be multiple references in Old and New speaking of the different heavens and the different hells. I talk a little bit about plural heavens in my book. I just touch on the matter, though, because there's a lot of things that all of this will bring up that has to go deeper into, for instance, how many judgment days are there? Mm. Well, we die and we face judgment, singular. So how does everyone get there to judgment at the same time if we're all dying at different times throughout the centuries?
Well, I always joke that based on the sins of man over thousands of years, we're going to need an eternity to sort everything out.
right. Well, you know, and I'm writing another book on this subject as well about time, because in Genesis, we see when time actually begins. And we know that time exists as a creation, therefore it's inside the creation. God is outside of creation. That's why he's eternal, everlasting. There is no time there. So regardless of how you lay out a timeline from beginning of time to the end of time and judgment day, it doesn't matter where people are placed in to be born or taken out. The moment they leave creation and time is going to be the same. It doesn't matter what part of the timeline they're on.
God is the ultimate time Lord.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a little hard to understand for us because we have finite minds and we think that time is linear.
Yeah.
But the more and more advances in science we see, we see that, oh yeah, well, actually this makes perfect sense because mm-hmm. there is a judgment day and we're all, you know, to be absent from the bodies, to be present with the Lord, mm-hmm. is appointed to all men to die once and then face judgment. Well, we're stuck in time. He's not. Looking at the different heavens and the different hells, there's little keys that we can look at to see which one that they're talking about. You got to obviously take everything into context. When it says heaven, when it says hell, okay, what were they talking about before? What are they talking about after? You know, and that helps you understand which one they're speaking of. Now, we know from Scripture, God is everywhere. Deuteronomy 4:39, Isaiah 66:1, Jeremiah 23, 1 Kings 1:39, Acts 17:27. But there's one place he's not. In Psalm 88:10-12, God is not in Gehenna. Now, Gehenna, which is also in the English Bible listed as hell, is not the same as Sheol. Gehenna is after Judgment Day. When we look at scriptures talking about Gehenna, this is the final hell after Judgment Day. This is called the place of ruin, the place of darkness, the land of forgetfulness. It's called the land of forgetfulness because God's not there. And there's a lot of verses talking about, you know, oh, if I go there, he ain't going to hear me. What good works could be done? What salvation is there? Well, there's none, you know, because this is after judgment. Mm-hmm. So you look at like Revelation 19:20, and you see the beast and the false prophet. Those two are thrown into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur. Then in Revelation 20, verse 10, we again see that in this lake of fire, the devil was thrown into there where the beast and false prophet already are. And then in Revelation 20:14-15, it says, then death and Hades or Sheol were also thrown in. And you say, well, how are you going to throw Sheol in? Well, it's not needed anymore. This is Judgment Day. You don't need a place to hold departed souls anymore because no one's going to die. So all these verses are in there, and you know, you just got to take things in context. Look at the original Greek and Hebrew words. And if you use concordances and dictionaries, you get a fuller meaning of the verses that you're reading.
Next week, we're going to be continuing on some of this discussion as we continue talking about his research into heaven and hell. And I know we did some study over at another church over here in town, was at Living Water, in Randy Elkhorn's book called Heaven. And again, a lot of similar information, some differences too, because a lot of it becomes, how do we interpret? You know, we don't have a lot of information always about heaven.
Right.
You know, everybody wants to go to heaven, but there's more descriptions of hell than there is of heaven.
Right. There aren't too many descriptions of the new earth.
Right. But anyways, we've approached coming to the end of the program. Thank you for joining us. Remind your friends that we are on at 7:30 a.m. Every week. And this is Bishop Jan Biederstedt,
Pastor Bruce Shields,
Paula Kelsey,
and Marvin Lee.
And remember that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to Father except through Christ. See you next week. Well, thank you for joining me this morning. I hope you've enjoyed the time that we've spent together as we've learned about Christianity around the world and the mission field, some Christian news, some interesting people, as well as some stories. And don't forget, we'll be back on next week at 7:30. Tell your friends and come and join us. This is Bishop Jan Biederstedt from Turner, Michigan, wishing you a blessed week.